Welcome to season two of Beyond Beauty. I'm so excited. Where I talk with visionary artists who share their journeys, influences, and creative processes. My name is Jacqueline Cofield, and I research and study artistic praxis. This season brings together a wonderful and diverse lineup of voices, artists whose roots and cultural backgrounds shape the art they bring to the world. Each conversation reveals not just the artwork, but the personal and collective narratives that inspire it. Join me as we explore the intricate blend of heritage, creativity, and purpose that defines these remarkable women artists. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with the incredible Brazilian artist, Tadaskia. Raised in a loving family that surrounded her with support and the freedom to dream, Tadaskia was encouraged to see the world through a lens of vibrant color, music, and creative exploration. Her Afro-Indigenous heritage and her upbringing in Brazil form the vibrant foundation of her multidisciplinary practice. In this conversation, we'll explore her journey from early experiences in art to the powerful ways her cultural background and family influence continue to shape her work. Let's explore how Tadaskia brings life, love, and imagination into each piece she creates. I am so excited to be in community with you today. Tadaskia, thank you so much for making time. I know you're in Brazil. I'm jealous. I wish I was there in sunny Brazil. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for this invitation. It's beautiful for me. And I will speak sometimes in English, sometimes in Portuguese. So thank you all for listening to us.
Absolutely. I welcome your dual language, Portuguese, English. It's very important to me as a scholar to not center English. And so I'm totally happy to have different languages spoken on Beyond Beauty podcast. So I'm super excited about that, actually. And it was so lovely to meet you in person at the Museum of Modern Art, where you have an exhibition. You were so generous with your thinking and your time and your responses to our group who we were with Art Noir, having a private tour with you. And yes, it was just so lovely. I'm super thrilled to have you on as a guest on Beyond Beauty. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jacqueline. It's always beautiful for me because now I'm learning more about English. So in that context, to speak for many people in English was a little, hard in the beginning, but after it was interesting because to me, language is like a poem also. So sometimes you can make mistakes in the language.
And it takes so much courage. I work at the Whitney Museum of American Art. I'm a Joan Tisch teaching fellow there. And I do tours in Spanish as well. And Spanish is not my first language. I learned Spanish studying abroad in Venezuela and in Mexico. And when my boss asked me if I would do it, I thought about all my friends who are doing their master's and doctoral degrees, who are from other countries, and English is not their first language, and they come to the US and they're doing these presentations, papers, writing a dissertation in English. And I was like, if they can do that, then I can push past my fears and speak to people. I was so scared, but I could push past my fears and speak to people in Spanish for 45 minutes. So I appreciate your bravery and courage and generosity with approaching dual language communications.
Yeah, I have to do this because sometimes it's important to have a translator. But I think for me, my biggest learning in USA was making mistakes in language. You know, it's like something existential for me also. So I learned to be another entity.
Yes, well, I'm so delighted and So listeners, we have an interpreter who's going to be here in the moments that Tadaskia, because I really wanted her to feel very comfortable, to feel fluid and not restricted by the English language. So she may go in and out of English and Portuguese. And so do you want to introduce your friend who's here to help us with interpretation at times?
Yeah, friends, can you help me with this translating, Francis? So,
hi, Francis. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll say hello. Hi. I'm just here to facilitate and help with the language.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful. So it's like a little community. We're building a community in this interview and this session. So I'm delighted by that. So I want to jump into the questions. I'm here at Teachers College, Columbia University, and I love to ask artists about their early introductions to creative expression. Thinking back to your childhood, are there any experiences that you feel opened your eyes to the possibilities of creative expression or art?
Yeah, you can translate me, Francis, in step by step, mm-hmm. if you want. Eu comecei no mundo da arte primeiro com a minha família. Minha mãe me ensinando a desenhar e eu ouvindo meu avô tocando música.
Okay, so she started in the world of art with her family, with her mother, sua mãe ensinando o quê?
Desenhar.
Ah, her mother teaching her to draw and her grandmother ensinando, sua avó ensinando?
Não, eu vendo, sim, my grandfather playing.
Playing guitar.
His guitar, yeah.
Mm.
So the first time was with Dan and seeing Dan. And after in a school, public school in also, when I was a child, and quando eu era criança na escola pública.
When you were a child at state school.
And mm-hmm. eu participei de muitos workshops de envolvendo arte.
She was involved in a lot of workshops with art.
E depois quando comecei até depois com when I was 12 years old, eu entrei na igreja evangélica.
So after she was 12 years old, she started going to church, evangelical church.
And there I started to sing and to dance and to learn theology.
Mm-hmm. Theology, yeah. Uh-huh.
So was mixed, you know? Was part of my family, the background of my family, like my mother and my auntie also gave me some objects to draw, like pencils, colored pencils, you know, like something about this. Mm-hmm. When my mother was in the hospital to treat her issues, mental issues. So me and my sister stayed with my auntie, Gracilene Guarani. Gracilene Guarani and my mother, Elenice Guarani, is so important in my career also.
Mm-hmm.
They are a Black indigenous person. So she mixed it. Afro-indigenous. I don't know how can I say this.
No, that's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the word.
So, and for them, color is life. So when you put color, you put life into the drawings. So my formation in art is mixed. And in the beginning, it's between the schools, public schools and church, the evangelical church. And after I entered entered.
Started the church?
No, eu entrei num colégio técnico.
Started a technical college.
when I was 15. 15, I started in a technical school.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned there to do technical drawing because okay. I did a technical course to be a electrotechnica. How can I say? It's like
electrician.
Yeah.
a technician of electrics. Yeah.
I did this, you know, in my ensino medio.
Tadaschi, você foi na escola pública, né? Estadual.
Sim, mas isso foi quando eu tinha 15 anos, eu entrei num colégio técnico, de eletrotécnica.
Yeah. Wow. So she went to a public school, not actually what we call in British English anyway, public school. She was at a state school. Yeah, regular state school.
Until mas nessa 15. Escola que eu entrei, ela era um colégio técnico.
Okay, and at 15 she started the electrical technician at the technical college.
So you mentioned you were doing workshops when you were in the public schools and when you were, or the state schools when you were younger. Were those workshops part of the school curriculum or was that something that was more like in the community?
It's inside the school and outside the school because some projects you can do like for a scholarship from the government. So they in the past did some a house, some place to learn something like informatica. How can I say this? Like to learn.
This is IT, learning IT, yeah, or basic computer skills.
Sometimes it's like to do poems inside the school. So I did everything, you know, I did everything available to me. So everything is free without to pay. I did.
Yeah. Why? Why were you interested in trying? I think that's so, it's very compelling that you were early on exploring all these different paths. You're a multidisciplinary artist today. And I see early on you were having these exposures to all these different disciplines. Why are you interested in having all these different experiences and exposing yourself to all these different knowledges and disciplines?
Yeah, I think my mother learned to teach that me ensinou a falar
com taught me.
Taught me to speak to divine, to spirits, to something else. And my father me ensinou, taught me.
Taught me
to work, to wake up early, you know, so I start to do my study early, ever, me and my sister in the past, it's like an obligation to study in the morning, to learn how to work. So my father, meu pai dizia para eu e a minha irmã não ser como ele. Que chato. It's a
yeah. Her father taught her and her sister not to be like him. Yeah.
É, como
the work ethic.
Huh? Como
work ethics? Get up early. Yeah.
Oh, so he taught her them to be like him. I think you said not to be.
Not to be in the low position. No, my father wants me and my sister to get opportunities to be in more high positions. So, because my family, it's like a poor family in the money sense, but a rich family in the another sense, you know? So I think I learned a lot from my family, like resilience, like to believe in myself, believe in my name, believe in God, believe in everything that I can't see, but I can imagine. This is since my childhood, like, you know, believe in something that it's not possible to see sometimes. It's not available in the real in the physical world, but you can imagine.
Right.
So I think my father gave to me and my sister an international name, not my name now, because my name now is my chosen name. I choose my thing. But my previous name was my father gave to me and my sister an international name, because in his mind, we and my sister, we fly away from home.
Ooh, this is so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, this love ethic that you're talking about, that sounded even the way that your father really encouraged you to develop your imagination while working hard, while sort of being planted in the present, to be also thinking beyond this moment now, to be thinking and dreaming and manifesting through this hard work. My mother did a magic trick with me when I was younger. And what your story is making me remember, she told me I can create magic. And I was a teenager. So I was like, what are you talking about, mom? And so we went outside and got in the car. And she told me, she said, say, I want a glass of milk. And I was like, mom, this is silly. And I was like, okay, I'm going to entertain you. I'm going to do it. So I said, okay, I want a glass of milk. Then she told me to open my eyes. And then I opened my eyes and she said, now go in the kitchen, go in the refrigerator, get a cup, pour out a glass of milk and come back here and close your eyes. So then I was like, what in the world? So I was like, mom, okay, I'll do it. So I went in there, I got this glass of milk. I came back in the car and I sat there and closed my eyes again. And she said, now open your eyes. And I opened my eyes and she said, what do you see in your hand? I said, a glass of milk. She said, see, you just did magic. It doesn't matter how the steps that you had to do in the middle. You said you wanted something.
Wow.
But now you have it. A minute ago, you didn't have that. And so I was like, wow, that was
beautiful.
Deep. Yeah. And so the story you were just explaining to me about your mother, your aunt, your upbringing in your family, in your school, in your church, in your community, and the ways that your father really cultivated this work ethic with you. I see how they really planted all these seeds in you to create the magic that I experienced when I first saw you at the Museum of Modern Art. So yes, I love that.
Yes, I think it's a combination, you know, because my mother is more spiritual and she talks with stars, with plants, with she sees and shadows and things that from another world. And my father Agnaldo Moraes, my mother Elenice Guarani. My father is more realist, you know. Mm-hmm. So they told to me and my sister, like, you need to learn to, you know, to wake up and to study, to, you know, like, you need this for life. It's like something you need to build for being as someone, because if you don't do this, maybe people can't believe in you, you know? So it's like,
yeah. And then you went on to the University of Rio de Janeiro and you got a master's degree in education.
Yeah.
And were you thinking about passing on all of this beautiful work ethic and belief in self that you just mentioned? Why did you choose to go into education? Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, it's interesting because everything about my choices, it's about to get, I will speak in Portuguese, it's better.
It's okay.
Everything about my formation tem a ver com minha família, meu pai principalmente, nos ensinar a ter independência.
This is about my family and my father in particular teaching me independence.
Yeah,
about being independent.
Yeah, to be in the independent, get my independence. So para conseguir isso, sendo
to manage this, to manage to come from a very poor family,
você precisa se associar a todos os projetos que te abrem oportunidades.
You have to be involved in all of the projects which can give you opportunities.
Mm-hmm. So, todos os projetos gratuitos, eu estava...
All of the free projects she was involved with.
Mm-hmm. E quando eu entrei para a escola técnica, eu escolhi a escola técnica pelo nome.
And when she started the technical college, she chose it for the name.
Eletrotécnica, because the eletrotécnica was like, this sounds nice, you know.
I love that.
But meu pai disse para eu fazer um curso técnico porque isso me garantiria alguma coisa.
Well, her father encouraged her to do the technical course because it would guarantee something for the future.
Yeah, but it was so hard, you know. It's like something mixed with matemática, física.
Maths and physics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, Jesus, not for me. But mas eu encontrei o desenho técnico lá, que foi uma coisa muito interessante.
So she discovered technical design there, which was very interesting.
Yeah, it's like something you have to distribute the electricity in these drawings, no? These technical drawings, like architecture. It's like something about this.
Mm-hmm.
E quando eu terminei o ensino médio, eu fiquei entre engenharia.
And when she finished school, she was in between engineering and...
Engenharia, artes, geografia, história.
Engineering, arts, geography, history. So it was of science, né? Journalism.
Geologia.
Geology.
It's a lot. Mas eu não tinha, porque todo mundo fazia um curso preparatório para entrar na universidade.
Yeah, most people do a preparation course to start university.
Mas a minha família não tinha dinheiro, então o patrão do meu pai começou a pagar o curso para mim.
So her family didn't have the money for her to do this course, so her father's boss started to pay the course.
Mas eu achava muito difícil estudar para engenharia, necessitava um know-how que eu não estava acostumada, que eu não yes. tinha naquele momento.
Yes, it was very difficult to study for the engineering course because it required some knowledge that she didn't have at that time.
Uh-huh. Então eu precisei fazer uma escolha, e eu precisava fazer uma escolha muito certeira, porque eu não tinha também, por conta da minha família precisar de dinheiro, de eu precisar de dinheiro, eu não podia fazer uma escolha aleatória, eu precisava escolher de maneira...
She had to make a choice, but needed to be a good choice and the right choice, because you don't have the money or the time to make the wrong choice. Yeah, it has to be a serious commitment.
Então, eu percebi que, por conta da nota de corte ser a mais baixa também, por conta de eu já ter já uma aproximação com artes e com dar aula naquele momento, né? Porque I'm not a teacher in that moment.
Mas as cotas para cursos que você fez?
Scholarship from...
Cotas de raça mesmo, do governo.
Racial.
Yeah, so there are racial quotas for courses and universities in Brazil. And the quotas were for mais baixo para curso de arte, de menos?
Sim.
So there were fewer vacancies for the arts courses. So it's harder to do, right,
yes.
with fewer quotas. But This was your choice, the art.
Yeah, mas eu precisava ter algo que eu não que tivesse que me desse uma garantia. E
she needed something that was going to be a surefire, the right choice.
E aí eu escolhi de uma maneira entre várias opções, eu escolhi ser artista e professora.
Okay, so amongst all these different options, she chose to be an artist and a teacher.
E quando eu comecei a faculdade, eu percebi que eu sequer conhecia o mundo, que o que eu conhecia da arte era muito pouco, assim. Eu percebi que eu não tinha nem o background, nem o know-how artístico da universidade.
Okay, and when she started the art university, she realized that she there was a lot she didn't know about art.
Yeah. Well. So was interesting because my background is totally different from the background of the university. You know, the artist course in the university. So it was a shock because I was there with a Christian mentality, you know, it's like cisgender mentality. It's like escondendo minha transgeneridade. It's like something about this, like hiding my trans.
Hiding your transgenderness. Yes.
So it's like, you know, it's a mix of something. It was beautiful for me, the university, because it was a crack. Like a break, it's something like change everything, because I met there foreign people with another background. Was like a shine, you know, from my mind.
Did you move there? You go to live in the university campus?
After 1 year, eu saí da igreja e saí de Santíssimo.
A pergunta, Tadashi, era se você morava na faculdade no campus.
Não, depois...
Ah, foi.
É isso. Depois de 1 ano, eu saio da igreja e saio de Santíssimo e fico mais perto da universidade.
Okay, so after a year, she stopped going to church and left Santíssima, the neighborhood she grew up in, and moved closer to the university.
Yes.
I just have to pause for a second because, first of all, I just want to thank you for sharing this story, and also thank you for your patience with the process of translating. And I want to thank the listeners for that as well, because what I'm hearing is so beautiful. I mean, what you're talking about is what I would say that Robin D.G. Kelly, who wrote Freedom Dreams, the Black Radical Imagination, talks about of this social movements, or he talks about them as social movements as poetic, right? And he talks about poetic knowledge and the poetics of these lived experiences. And I see this, your community, freedom dreaming, planting seeds of freedom dreaming in you, and you navigating the personal and the sociopolitical, the context that you're in Rio de Janeiro, as an Afro-Indigenous person and a young person who's thinking about the future and trying to figure out what path will be best. And it's a lot of pressure and a lot of choices to make. And so for you, what I'm hearing is like, I'm going to evoke the words of Cardi B. You don't want to choose.
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't want to choose. I'm going to try all these different things because I'm not sure yet. And this is part of my process. It's not a linear path. And just the belief that all of these experiences will manifest as useful in your trajectory, whatever that would be. Sounds like at this time you weren't quite sure that it would be an artist, but you had this interdisciplinary approach to building up your experiences and your knowledge base. And so I just wanted to name what I'm hearing, identify this beautiful journey of freedom dreaming that you're on. And so you have this background in interdisciplinary experiences, in professional trade, and also in the university. I mean, you have your experiences with your family and your community supporting you. There's a lot of love around you, a lot of belief in you, a lot of dreams around you. And that's just so beautiful. I'm grateful for that, for you and for us, this example that you have. And I want to talk about your creative process and how all of that might be influencing your creative process. You talked about the role of the spiritual in your upbringing and how your mother was more thinking spiritually and your father was thinking more practically. And I've read in studying your work that you do negotiate the material and the immaterial in your practice. And I was wondering if you could speak to how does all of this that you've just described, this journey filled with love, filled with possibility, filled with opportunities, you being so courageous and adventurous and experimenting with different disciplines, how does all of that now play a role in your creative process?
It's a big mystery for me because sometimes não é algo que eu consiga ver com os olhos físicos.
It's not something that I see with my physical eyes.
Something you have to imagine. It's like about love, you know? I think now I can see better the love of my family and the love of my friends and the love around me. But when you have so much pressure to be something, you know, para você ser alguém específico, às vezes você...
Pressure to be something specific is sometimes limiting. You can't manage to be that thing.
Você não consegue contemplar.
You can't contemplate or imagine?
No, I think contemplate. I think now I can contemplate more, you know? I can breathe.
I can breathe.
Yeah, better. I think now it's and I can share my breath, minha respiração. It's like
my breathing or my breath, maybe.
Yeah. I think now I can share more this, you know, because this word is a controlled word. It's a word that is impossibilita.
O mundo, né?
O mundo.
The world, yeah. So the world is...
Ele impossibilita você de compartilhar a respiração, de compartilhar a contemplação.
Okay, so the world, the way it is, can restrict you or inhibit you from sharing this breathing.
And for me, the study, it's like a way to breathe, to breath and breath,
to breathe.
Para respirar, uma maneira de respirar.
So studying is like a way to breathe.
Yeah. It's something that you can, like as Franz Fanon said, it's like something you can in the white masks and black skin.
Okay, over here, scholar Tadaskia citing Fred Fanon.
Yeah, Fanon is important for me because in that moment in the book, you can see him speaking like something about that.
First of all, I just want to point out that one of the things I love about talking with artists is I learned so much about this journey of constant research, this constant exploration. And you have a master's degree, like you're an educated woman. It's like you're bringing so much intellectualism to your practice, lived experience, and also you're in conversation with not just your own lived experience, but with, I want to say, even academia, because there's things that you are citing, that you are referencing, that may not be visible for all or understood by all. Like you're mentioning Fanon now, and maybe some people don't know who that is, but this is an opportunity for us all to learn. I think it's so powerful you talk about the breath, because I'm a yogini. I actually went to India, to Rishikesh, and got my yoga certification back in 2016. And one of the things that really struck me in that time was thinking about the role and importance of the breath being a vital life force And the first thing you do when I was teaching yoga classes, like I would say, like, the breath is so important because it's the first thing you do and it's the last thing you do.
Wow.
And it is like the symbol for your life. Like when the breath is absent, your life is absent. It's a vital life force. And it's a way of like becoming very connected with your body as well. So when you talk about being able to breathe and your breath being a process, I mean, that's deep. That's deep. I also read that you work with your eyes closed.
Yeah. But for me, I went to connect with this, but for knowing this book, and as I mentioned, that it's like a Amazona arida.
Like a very dry area, desert-like, maybe?
Yeah, it's like uma zona rebaixada.
A low region.
Estéril, árida. E uma rampa extremamente despojada, onde ressurgimento pode acontecer, onde algo pode acontecer. Tem esse lugar,
uma zona
árida, Panon, nesse livro, Peles Negras, Máscaras Brancas. Ele diz que tem essa zona árida.
So in this book that is in the chat, yeah?
Yeah.
He talks about this dry zone.
Yeah. But it's possible to blow some in this area.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's possible, you know? It's like you can...
Well, to flourish.
Yeah, flourish. But it's hard, you know? Because it's like something to put your... As a nigga, as a trans... It's like a place that put you as a something... Fanon told about as a nigga, as a black man, as a something with color. So, but you can imagine, you know, the society putting you in many zones, in many difficult zones, and you can breathe in these zones. You can't love in these zones. You can't share your breathing in these zones. You can't live. So I think sometimes when I saw the life of my family and the life of my friends and our lives and life of many people, it's like some things not to emerge, you know? It's a life not to be life. It's more close to the death sometimes than to life.
Right. What some scholars call a social death.
Yeah, I think it's a... And now I'm 31. It's now I can... Not in the way that I want, but now I can move a little slow than before. Because I think in my whole life, I have to run. And was interesting because I was shocked in New York because I realized that New York, it's a crime to be loitering. Was a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stay. You can't contemplate. You can't be, you know, it's like it's something about this, you know, it's crime to be for a long time in the streets. It's something so violent to me. It remind me at times, so, you know, it remind me of colonial time. It's like you in New York, I felt this, you know. So for me, this estudar, to study and to imagine is something that can put you in the... in um lugar mais florido, in um lugar mais
vivo. So can take you to a better place to flourish or a place of more life.
So, education for me is so important because it's not about the formal education. It's not about the it can be about aula. Pode ser sobre isso também, sobre as universidades, as escolas.
It can mm-hmm. be this as well, but universities mm-hmm. and schools.
But, mas o estudo, ele tá nesses lugares que fazem a gente florescer, que fazem a gente compartilhar a vida.
Okay, so study or education, I suppose, can be in other places as well, but places like this where you can flourish or find life.
Mm. Wow. Okay. There's so much to process and to think through here. But when you were talking, I was thinking about this book called Fugitive Pedagogy by Professor Jarvis Givens at Harvard. And he talks about fugitive pedagogy as this theory of and practice of Black education in America, where historically, because it was illegal to learn to read and write, so you're talking about, you've been mentioning this regulation of bodies and what they're doing. And that was the case back in the day. It was illegal for Black people to learn to read, to write, and also to teach them to read, to write. And so there were many ways, which Jarvis Givens is referring to, that people would practice these brave, these dangers of, there were many ways that people would navigate and overcome all these restrictions placed on their body and their experiences through the imaginary and also through hiding. So that's hiding the practice of teaching and learning, or doing things that were not necessarily overt or that were in certain community. And so when you were talking about the way that you escape or go beyond the material circumstance of the present through imagination, that touched me a lot because it made me think about the ways that historically Black people, for example, in the US, and I imagine is the case also in Brazil, have had to engage in acts of education, self-education, education in communities in order to imagine a future that is more just, that is more loving, that is more inclusive. And then with your artistic practice, you materialize, right? You create these spaces, these experiences for us to encounter. Well, I remember when I walked into the room of your exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art, New York, my body was just taken over. I needed to just like not be speaking for a moment.
Ah, beautiful.
First of all, the scale, it was almost like to the ceiling. I mean, it was like the whole wall, the whole room. You had taken up so much of that space. And I love the way you were taking up space. Even on the floor, we had to navigate and be careful. The ways that we navigate around your work had to be conscious and caring of the space and each other and what was there. And so I'm seeing these connections that I think I'm sure so many people are going to be writing so much about your work in these ways. But and I'm just processing all of this in real time with what you're saying. But it's just really profound. There's so much profound going on here. And I feel like people might need to listen to this episode a couple times to really process like the depth of what you're conveying.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot, you know, for me, it's some, yeah. Not about your question. It's a lot about the, to be alive. It's a lot, you know, you need many things to nurture,
to be nourished. Nourished.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Para ser nutrida e para nutrir.
And to nourish others.
Para ver a vida como ela é.
To see life the way it is.
Mm-hmm. You said earlier that color is life and
yeah.
breath is life. And then you're talking about a life, your life,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And your life having so much love in it, but also so many different experiences. I want to ask you about your recent installations feature Black birds, and you've mentioned the significance of Sankofa in your work. Why do you use the bird in your practice, and how does your understanding of that symbol evolve from piece to piece?
Yeah. For me, It's like a window, open a window. Yeah, in 2022, it was so hard for me to be alive and to work and get money. It was so hard. And I remember in the grillage, here in the favela, here in Rio de Janeiro, I saw the symbol of Sankofa in the window. I don't know if you know this symbol.
Oh, grade, like favela. Tadashka, yeah. Na grade. Okay, yeah. In a context on it, here in Rio, there's a lot of people have bars on the windows, on the lower level, ground floor houses, apartments for security reasons, and they can be quite decorative. Mm. Yeah. So in the bars of the decorative window protection, you saw the Sankofa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which in Sankofa make a reference to the Akan tribe of Ghana, and it translates to go back and get it. It's like a proverb.
Yeah, I know this after. Because in the beginning, because when I, quando entrei na UERJ.
When she started the university.
Com 18 anos. Teve,
18.
Teve uma conferência feita pela comunidade negra.
There was a conference organized by the black community.
Na universidade, dando boas-vindas aos cotistas.
This was to welcome the people who were part of the quota acceptance, who'd come in to fulfill quotas, racial quotas.
E lá, com 18 anos, eu ouvi pela primeira vez sobre Sankofa.
And so when she was 18, this was where she heard for the first time about the Sankofa.
E depois de muito tempo, em 2022...
And much later, in 2022...
Eu me lembrei de Sankofa quando eu estava voltando de Barcelona, porque eu vivi numa praça chamada Little Butts.
So she remembered the Sankofa when she was coming back from Barcelona, because tinha uma praça chamada
Little Butts. Eu vivia... É, em catalão é Ocelet.
And she was staying in a square which was called Little Birds.
In catalan, Ocelet. When I come back to Rio, I saw in the airplane, because it was my first trip crossing the ocean, and I saw night turning and day. So it's I feel myself like a bird also, like seeing...
Was this your first flight there?
My first flight crossing the ocean was when I was in... When I went to Barcelona in 2022. And I stayed close to a square called Ocelet, that means in Catalan, little bird. And I remember, and when I was in Rio, I remember Sankofa. And because I saw Sankofa in the window. So, and window, it's like something that you can open to the world. You can open, it's like something in going to outside. It's like a way to, again, to breathe, to imagine. So it's like, I think in this way, I like turning myself as a bird. And I think I imagine a shared liberation from this. You know, it's like, it was like an inside.
And you said early on that your father wanted you to fly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's like sometimes. It's like a sign, no? For me, it was like a sign because, and eu escrevo desde criança, desde adolescente, na verdade.
So she's been writing since she was a teenager.
Teenager, yeah, teenager. In my mind, Eu sempre quis publicar um livro.
Oh, she always wanted to publish a book.
Yeah, mas ninguém nunca me chamou para publicar um livro.
But no one had ever asked her to, or called her up to publish a book.
Então eu aproveitei esse momento de um pouco desesperador de 2022.
So she took advantage of this slightly desperate moment in 2022
para fazer o meu próprio livro de páginas soltas. Então, Ave Preta Mística, Mystical Black Bird, it's my first book. It's like my first unbound book, you know, it's something that was like something like to put myself out more than inside. And the Ave Preta Mística, Mystical Black Bird is not me. It's like an entity like teach me, you know, something to some entity to teach us to be in beyond the time, beyond the no time, para além do tempo conhecido.
Beyond the known time, literally, known time. Time that we know.
Because the, because the known time is a time of death also. It's a controlled time in the na maior parte das vezes.
In the most of the time.
In the most of time, it's a time to... Not to love. In the most of times, the time to fly, to fight, not
because
to flight.
Time is like a restriction, in a way.
In this world.
Yes. Yeah.
In this world. In this way to imagine this world. Because everyone was like, todo mundo, a maioria das pessoas aprendeu a viver nesse mundo. Do jeito que ele é.
Yeah, most people learn to live in this world the way it is.
Including myself. So I'm not an exception. But in my artwork, I can imagine like a voice from, like a voice between this known world. And beyond.
And beyond. Yes. Maxine Green talks about imagining otherwise and that works of art give us this opportunity, present us with these opportunities to imagine otherwise. Imagine in ways that, as you're describing, that don't exist. And here you are talking about imagining beyond what we consider time.
Yeah, but I think. We have the power also to see things that is not here. You know, it's like a mystery. Because sometimes you... às vezes você não recebe nem vê amor, mas você pode imaginar e esse amor começa a existir.
Sometimes you don't receive love. But you can imagine
you can't
it.
See.
You, you know, you can't see it or you don't receive it. But you can imagine it and then it could come about and happen.
So, you know, sometimes you can, sometimes you don't live the liberation, a shared liberation, but you can imagine a lot this and maybe this can happen. Happen someday. I don't know. You know, it's like something mystery for me. It's a mysteries because it's like the love. You know, it's like love. In some moment of my life, I can't see love in my life.
I mean, that's really powerful because when we imagine these other possibilities, it makes us our imagination, what we're seeing in our mind's eye, it makes us feel things.
Yeah.
So it does return to the body. It's real. It's palpable. It's immaterial in that way. It's
yeah.
And so what our imaginary, what I'm understanding from what you're saying is a way of regarding the imaginary as not just a possibility, but as actually present, as actually a form, actually as something real, even though it's not seen. It exists, and we know it exists because we feel when we imagine.
Yeah. And sometimes take long time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can't see, but maybe the other generation or the next to the next and to the next, like so.
Or the one after, or the after that.
Yeah, thank you, Francis. So I don't know. So, it's like, and sometimes when I close my eyes, it's not, it's to be a part of the controlling, to control, you know, something. Mm. It's like, quando fecho os meus olhos é para me separar um pouco do controle. Porque.
Mm. Right, like the imaginary as a form of reclaiming agency, reclaiming power. Is that what you're suggesting? This idea of agency, this idea of reclaiming control, reclaiming power through the imagination?
No, I não sei se eu entendi, Francis.
Ela está perguntando se é uma forma de você imaginar, de você resgatar um certo poder, potência, controle.
No, it's, for me, it's like... Mm. É para me tirar, na verdade, do controle. Eu, quando eu fecho esses olhos, eu quero sair do controle.
Yeah, so when she closes her eyes, she wants to let go of the control.
É, eu quero sair do controle. Quando eu faço os meus desenhos sem sketch, without sketch, when I do my drawings without sketch, it's to be out of the control. You know, when I do my arrangement without sketch, without, sem modelo prévio.
Without a prototype, some kind of model prototype.
Mm-hmm. I went to getting out of the control.
Let
go of the control, because we are controlled persons, because nós aprendemos a controlar.
We've learned to control.
Yeah. And early on, what I heard from you was that your early experiences with trying all these different things was like trying to figure out how to take control. And now I'm hearing you say that you have arrived at this place of releasing control, actually finding the way, the method through the release of control.
In the art space, because when I do my bureaucracies, I'm inside of control, you know? When I see my career, I need to demanding things, demanding what I want about my interview, what I want about my videos, what I want. But when I, in the space, in the art space, doing my artwork, I went to like another place, you know, something different. It's like a window.
Ooh, it sounds like a space between the breaths.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's the in and the out, but there's a moment where there's neither in or out.
Yeah, there is a moment that I can... It's like when you love someone, for me, you have to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. I want to be vulnerable when I do my work. So I can't be vulnerable in every space, in qualquer lugar, in any space, in anywhere.
Just anywhere, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I can't be. I want to be, but it's not possible to be vulnerable.
It's not easy. It's not, even it's when, not. Even when people are working out, it's like you have to remind them, breathe. Even to breathe sometimes is like, so this is definitely, I understand that this is not an easy thing to achieve. It's a pursuit. And I love that. I love that what we end up seeing is what manifests from these moments of you in that practice of trying to live in that space in between the breaths, in that moment of not taking control, not releasing control, but just control is like not part of the equation. Yes.
Yeah, because for me, the space of my art is a space to contemplate.
Yeah.
I want to contemplate and I want to share this.
You create across various mediums, drawing, photography, sculpture, writing, and more. And so in the moment of selection of medium, how does that release of control play in those moments? And how do these different working in these different forms allow you to do this work?
At MoMA, the curators choose my work. So they choose, I want a book, I want a drawing, I want sculptures, you know? Mm. So, but I did without sketch. So eu mostrei, eu apresentei para eles o que eu iria fazer, mas eles não sabiam como iria ficar. Só o livro.
So she presented what she was going to do, but not how it was going to be realized.
Mm. So they knew that, now we have drawings on wall, but they don't know how the drawings, como os desenhos iriam aparecer, como eles iriam ser, entende?
Yeah, they didn't know how the drawings would get there on the wall or what they would be like.
Mas eles sabiam que... Então, quando eu sou convidada para fazer trabalho, as pessoas costumam desejar certo tipo de trabalho meu. Mas o jeito que é feito é improvisado. Tem uma improvisação, é livre, assim.
So when she's invited to do work in some place, that it's normally agreed what it's going to be, but not how it's going to happen. So it's an improvised process, yeah?
Yes, and with this improvisational process, I'm wondering, because I've read that you incorporate ritualistic elements in your practice, and I'm wondering, can you describe what does it look like when you're working? Like, do you engage in certain ritual? Do you engage in certain practices? How do you physically get yourself to this place of imagining beyond time and space?
Na verdade, essa noção, os materiais, os materiais, eles vão aparecendo, né? Eu vou encontrando materiais.
The materials she works with sort of appear. Sometimes they're things she finds, things that were thrown away. A pergunta, Tadashi.
Eu vou chegar na pergunta.
Okay.
Mas pode me relembrar qual é a pergunta, mas eu vou chegar.
Não, era sobre se tinha ritual em sua. Quando você.
Então vou chegar nisso.
Okay. É. She's going to come to the ritual part.
Okay.
Porque, na verdade, eu comecei a fazer... Eu cheguei até a falar isso com você, você estava na outra entrevista. Eu cheguei a fazer a minha primeira escultura, uma das primeiras esculturas que eu fiz quando eu tinha 18 anos, eu desenhei na casca de ovo, nas cascas de ovo que meu pai jogava fora.
Okay.
E a minha filha jogava fora, depois de comer.
Yeah, one of the first sculptures she did was with eggshells, which her family threw a lot of them away because her father bought lots of eggs. And so it was a material that she could easily find in quantity and made sculptures by sewing them together.
Like doing a drawings on these shells, you know? For me, it's like a drawing also. It's like a drawing on in, out in this shell, eggshell. And after that, eu comecei a também usar essas palhas straw, essas palhas de taboa que o museu que eu trabalhava jogava fora.
So after that, she started using this straw material called taboa, which the museum threw a lot of away because it became old.
E depois eu comecei a adicionar líquidos, frutas, penas de galinha. Essas coisas que eu ia encontrando.
Yeah, and after she started to add liquids and feathers and powders and other materials that she found.
Mm.
E foi interessante porque eu tenho, was interesting because I have a Christian background. My family, some of my family is syncretic, mixed religions. But my father and my mother was more Christian. Mm. And after that, I'm doing these sculptures with this straw, with eggshell, and some friend told me that some materials that I use it's common to be used in the Candomblé religion. But I didn't realize it, you know? It's like it was more about I meeting these materials and doing things from this meeting than thinking about the history of the materials, you know? So I don't think my work is a ritualist work. Mm. I think I have a faith in the materials. So I think my work is more about
spirituality.
Mm-hmm. It's more about this because for me, the time of the powered is different from the time of the liquid, and it's different from the time of the vegetables and different from the time of the fruits. So I think this for me, it's something that change. It's like, Octava Butler, change. It's something spiritual. Change, right. It's God's change. Right. So if everything's changed, I change, the foods change, the straw change. And I like this, you know, I like people eating from my sculptures. In MoMA, it was not possible. It's not allowed, but I love the idea that people getting fruits and vegetables, putting in your bags, going to home, and you know, like doing a salad, something about this. I love this energy, the change, the o câmbio, a mudança, exchange, I don't know.
Câmbio is change and maybe exchange as well.
From element, I think I'm more formalist in this way, you know? It's more about the materials than the another. I think it's nice when you saw that materials have another life.
Yeah.
It's not the life that I put on them.
And that the materials can, in this case, what you're talking about, if you can consume them, that they would nurture us.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one last question. I always love to finish off asking, do you have advice for other artists coming? You're a young artist, but you've had so many experiences. So what advice do you have for other trans women artists, other women artists coming up who are figuring out their way, figuring out their process?
In the career sense, or the existential sense?
Either one, whichever one you want to give advice.
I think the first is do your work every day, every moment, meeting people that you like, listen teachers, because I love to listen teachers. So find teachers that you like to listen to. Find people that you love to listen to, that you is that and stimulate you to study, to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to because you need time, and sometimes takes long time to create something. So you need to, for me, it was so important to be engaged in many fields, you know, that I like. So free opportunities. So find free opportunities and, you know, learn learn things that you like, not just in the art field, but in another field. So, and for me, it's so important to make pray, to believe in something that I don't know, and believe in something that people maybe don't believe, or believe in something that it maybe is not possible to see yet, but you can see in another time. You know, believing in something that can be mystery, for me, is important. And in another context, for me, it's the career. So after you do your work, you have to do your work and do your work in the mistake way. Mistakes, take mistakes also. Don't be so demanding. Não seja tão exigente no começo do seu trabalho com você mesmo.
Yeah, don't maybe demand too much from yourself.
And after, you have to do your portfolio. You need to do your portfolio. A beautiful portfolio, bilingual.
Bilingual portfolio.
Bilingual, yeah. If you don't speak English, you put in your language and in English. And get... E pegue todos os e-mails de todos os curadores que você conhece e que você não conhece.
Oh, get the emails of all the curators that you don't know that you might meet.
E curators that you know and curators that you don't know, and sending for them, sending for everyone. Like, hi, I'm etc, etc, etc. This is my working. I'm sent you. Provavelmente não vão te responder.
Probably they're not going to respond. But
if you, it's happened with me. I sent for a lot of curators since I was, I don't know. But
can that be persistent?
One curator maybe in one time can see your portfolio and like your work. So maybe this can happen, you know? So you just need to believe that maybe it's not this in this time, but can be in another time. You know, it's like, and for me was important also doing another job. But I think it's more about precarização do trabalho. How can I say it? Doing something. You have to do your work as an artist in the beginning, as a hobby, you know, sometimes for me.
Yeah. You have to hustle while you wait. Thank you so much, Tadaska. This has been so amazing. I can't wait to share this really insightful, meaningful conversation with everyone. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank
you, Frances, for your help today with translating.
Okay.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me on this compelling conversation with Tadaskia. I hope her story of family love, creative freedom, and cultural pride has inspired you as much as it did me. Her dedication to merging her heritage with her artistic vision is truly a testament to the beauty and power of embracing one's roots. If you're an emerging artist, let Tadaskia's story remind you of the strength that comes from staying connected to your own background and beliefs. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond Beauty. And until next time, continue to find beauty in your own unique lived experiences and creative expressions.